Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, August 12th. We're ready to take off with you on another morning, another flight, another show.
Yes.
Always have to come up with something, Jen, you know?
I guess. Simple, hey, welcome to the show.
It keeps getting funnier and funnier all the time.
Yeah.
But
as long as you're having fun doing it.
Yeah, yeah, you know. We got to say something. We're here for an hour, you know.
Right.
It was funny this morning because I woke up with hiccups. I'm like, how the hell am I going to do the show if this stays? You know, I couldn't get him to stop. And I was thinking, this is funny. You know, I mean, the thing is, the things we have to worry about, you know, in an office job or something, it doesn't really matter. But you go on the air, you can't have hiccups.
No, that'd be weird for the listeners.
Yeah. Our tools are our voices. And if they don't work, they don't work.
Yep.
We don't do a show. But thank goodness everything is back. My breathing is back to normal. And we're here to serve you as your humble servants. She's like, speak for yourself.
Yeah, I'm doing a radio show. I'm not your servant. But that's great. You don't have hiccups anymore. It's kind of weird you woke up with them because usually doesn't it come from like breathing or like,
yeah,
eating,
like breathing
eating
air
or drinking too fast or something?
Right, yeah.
So what were you doing in your sleep?
Nothing. I don't know. Very interesting stuff.
Maybe you have spirits in your house.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe I was just swallowing air or something. I don't know. Spirits in my house, huh? Maybe I should sage my house too then, right?
Maybe.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I sure did.
Did you?
And the shower went off again last night.
Really?
Or this morning, yeah. Wow. I have a feeling something's wrong with it because... Yeah. It's an old building, like I've said. And so the shower, like the knob to turn the water on, off, high, low, whatever, is the same. It's one knob.
Right.
And I think it gets loose. Mm. So I think what happens is I leave it when I get out of the shower at a certain like position. And then it sort of like slowly rotates in the middle of the night over time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then that's when the water goes, it drips.
Right.
So, but it's loud enough for it to wake me up each night.
Yeah.
So I think I just need to leave it like on a certain setting after I get out of the shower and that will resolve it. But what I did take it as was a sign that it woke me up at a time this morning where it was like, get up and meditate.
Oh, okay. So that was a good thing.
Well, so I told the spirit and the shower and myself that give me a sec. I'm going to go back to sleep. I'm going to turn you off first, then go back to sleep for a little bit. I'm going to wake up at the time I said I'd wake up. I'll meditate then.
Right.
But I won't skip it. I will do it.
Okay.
So I committed to whatever is making me commit to it.
Right.
And I did it.
While you're half asleep. That's good.
Yeah, I made all these agreements
with commitment, yeah,
all the people in my head. And then I woke up finally and I meditated.
Good. Well, whatever works for you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if that works, that works. You know, you made a commitment to somebody and then you had to fulfill it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I commit to myself for all kinds of things. I should really do it for that, so.
Yeah. That's funny. I saw an article yesterday, I guess... they did an article in one of the magazines about online dating, and I guess they were Tinder figured that they were like deriding them and the that sort of thing. So they came out with like blasting tweets one after another to challenge the writer.
And what were those tweets?
Like they were tweeting like how many users they have and how many people they've made happy and have met through it and stuff. They gave examples of countries where did they say? I don't remember what countries, but where internet is limited and so forth, like North Korea or something, and people use Tinder there. So, yeah, so that's amazing.
And so what did the writer say in response?
So the writer said the article was not even about Tinder. So... Yeah.
Was
so
this writer from a large publication? Or
yeah,
what?
It's a pretty large publication. A Vanity Fair, maybe, one of those. Yeah. So, yeah, so Tinder must have just gotten, like, really irked by the article, and they decided to attack. But, I mean, they, you know, they have something there. I mean, the thing is, obviously, it's popular and it's helpful to people if they use it, if they have so many users.
It's changed the game. I mean, yeah. What else were we talking about before Tinder?
Right.
We weren't. I don't know that we'd have radio shows about Match.com and JDate and things like that. It's just there's not – those aren't as sexy and, like, they aren't as fast and they aren't as, like, on your phone and, like, quick and easy to use, and it's not so widely used in the way that Tinder is. Tinder is like a movement almost.
Yeah.
And so I think that – I mean, hey, you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but maybe the article was just anti-online dating. So I should read the article to see exactly what they were so irritated about.
Yeah.
You know, but it's funny how people go on Twitter and everything and start all these things. But
Twitter is like one large message board.
It is. That's what it is, you know. And but that's why I prefer Facebook, because Facebook, you can actually have conversations where you see everything in one place, you know. And it gives it a more intimate feeling than Twitter is just sort of like you broadcast.
It's different. It's for different uses. You know, Facebook connects you with people you're connected to. Twitter can connect you with people you're not and that you want to be connected to. It brings it makes the world a lot smaller.
Yeah.
You have access to different people.
Right, exactly. But the thing is, if a third person looks at it, it's like, what's the conversation about? You know, what's
you can click
about?
In and see it.
No, I know. But it just doesn't feel like there's a group of people talking about something, you know, where Facebook can facilitate that. But that's why we have both.
Right.
You know, to
they're
serve
different,
different
for things. Different.
I'm just saying why I prefer Facebook. Right. You know, I feel it's more like of a community almost. Yeah, but if you want to reach a lot of people, then Twitter is the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, because people don't, you don't have to friend everybody. And, you know, the funny thing is when I started, I think I started on Facebook when I started the station. So that was 2008. And I remember, you know, at the time everybody was like measuring how many friends you have and all that. Today, I don't think it even tells you how many friends people have, right? Only the common friends, I think.
Yeah,
I think
you're right.
It has likes. I mean, you can see likes, but not friends anymore. In fact, they've changed a lot of things, you know. I mean, your followers on a page, you can't see all of them anymore. I don't know why that is, but so you don't really know who's following you and all that, which is kind of weird. But so over the years, you know, over the early years, I would just like, you know, take every friend offer that I have, and just because I figured, look, it's, you know, it's for the business and everything and all that. But you know what? Now I'm sitting there and I'm going, all these people, I don't even know them. They're like total jerks, and I have on my thing, and it's like, why? You know, what do I need all these people for?
You don't.
So, but on the other hand, I felt that, you know, at least you get a lot of content from so many people, you know. You don't have to go over the same things over and over again. I figured if I only had a couple hundred or something, there wouldn't be that much to read.
No.
So.
But they do say we should probably spend our time elsewhere than on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another thing altogether. But.
Right.
But many people spend a lot of time on Facebook. I mean, I think relatively I don't spend that much time on it. I mean, I'm hardly ever on it on the phone. So it's just when I'm on the computer. Yeah.
I don't even go on it on the computer.
Really?
Yeah. But I that's why the meditation thing to me is so important, because I'm like, if I lessened my amount of time on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, what else is on my phone? Like five dating apps, like then checking all my email accounts that are on my phone. If I like spent less time doing those things, I would have more time for things that actually benefited me.
Right.
And instead of me looking at what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. Like now I have time for, obviously this all came to me last night. Now I have more time for meditation, Elevate, which is an app that makes your brain more agile and like use its functions better. Duolingo, so I can practice my French. And what was the other thing?
So you're investing in things that are productive.
Flossing. is the last thing.
Last thing, okay. I should take a segue here. Our guest was just trying to call. I figured it's a couple minutes early, but I wanted to just introduce. This is the author we were supposed to talk to 2 days ago, and his name is William Fortune. He wrote a book that I read last year and was amazing, a book called 1 Second After, and we're going to talk to him about his follow-up to that book, a sequel called 1 Year After. So, yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, the thing is that all these apps, they really waste your time. A lot of them do. But, you know, sometimes it's just, you want to indulge yourself, you know. I mean, I play Words with Friends. Somehow I find 15 minutes, half an hour to play it every day. You know, it just, you want to talk about stimulating your brain, that does that for me.
Great.
Yeah. So, So I enjoy that. And I've gotten pretty good at it. I know when people cheat, and then I cheat with them too. And I kick their ass.
All right.
Yeah. With people that don't cheat, I don't cheat. I enjoy it a lot.
Good.
Yeah. It's an old game, though. You know, I mean, I discovered it rather late, but still I've been playing it for, what, 2 years maybe?
I have friends that still play it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but...
Yeah. Do you have any games you waste time on? Because they're all a waste of time.
Yeah, Candy Crush.
Oh, Candy Crush. Yeah, everybody loves that.
But I don't play it that often. I'll play it, like, in bed before, like, I go to sleep just to, like... Because I'm already in bed.
Right.
So what else am I going to do?
Yeah,
I guess I could read.
Here comes our guest now. So we're going to be... we're going to talk to him now. And, William, are you with us?
Absolutely.
Thank you for calling in, sir. Can you pronounce your last name for me?
Sure. It's Forschen.
Forschen. Okay. I'm glad I asked.
Yes.
Yes. William Forschen.
If we had time, I would tell you a funny story about that.
But. Yeah. Thank you for calling us this morning. Where are you calling us from today? What part of the country?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, in North Carolina.
I'm actually going there for a wedding in October.
Really?
Yeah.
To that city?
You're going to love it.
Great. I can't wait. I have to take like two planes to get there.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds pretty good. So it must be an inspiring place to write books and everything. Have you written for a long time?
Yeah. I've been, I've been a writer for 30 years, and I've written about 40 books.
Wow. Wow.
And as I'm talking to you, I'm looking out across 50 miles of the Smoky Mountains.
Wow.
So yeah, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world to live.
Really? Wow. Some people know how to live, let me tell you. We're here in a world of concrete. And
what concrete? I don't see any concrete, Sam.
No, because you're looking out the window, but we have a lot of freeway here.
Well.
Yeah, I grew up just outside Newark, New Jersey, so yeah. I know.
So you know how that is, yeah. So you consciously moved somewhere else. Yeah, good for you. I guess, you know, when you're a writer, you need more inspiration than just busy freeways around you, you know. So that's
Well, actually,
cool.
my office is kind of a closet because... Otherwise, I get too distracted enjoying the view and the storms and the clouds and all that. So. Yeah, I'm in a blessed place.
Yeah. So, William, 40 books, that's a lot of books to write. Do you have a certain genre, or do you write different things?
Well, I started off writing science fiction. Mm-hmm. I went back to graduate school in my late 30s to get a PhD in specializing in military history.
Oh, wow.
I was actually a full-time student for 4 years. I loved it.
Yeah.
That time of my life. And that shifted me far more into writing history. And eventually what I'm working in now, I don't know where I fit. Is it thriller or political or just contemporary crisis? That's what I'm tending to write about now.
That's true, yeah. And 1 Second After was a mix of many of these things. It was science fiction in a way, and you know, sort of like the end of the world, and you had I considered it a thriller, or at least let's say an action book, but yeah, I mean, you can describe it in many different ways, and that's why I was so excited when your publicity came to us and asked us to interview you, because I had read your book when it came out, One Second After, simply because I love reading great books, and it totally spoke to me, you know. So I thought, wow, I've read a book from him, and he's got a sequel now. Let's talk about that. So briefly tell the listeners what One Second After was about, and then we'll talk a little bit about the follow-up.
Whatever you want is fine with me. And my apologies for the mess up. I had a 10:15 interview, and I saw 10:15, and I thought, one was 10:15 Eastern time, one was 10:15 your time.
Yeah,
and
don't worry about it.
My dyslexic brain messed it up, so my apologies for that.
No, don't worry about that at all. It's fine. It's fine. These things happen all the time. So One Second After, tell us a little bit, like briefly, what the plot is about.
I began working on One Second After actually back in 2004, when in July of 2004, a congressional committee, it's easy to find online, it's just simply Google up, Congressional Report on the Threat of EMP, 2004, Chairman Roscoe Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
And on the day that report was released, I was in D.C., I discussed the report with a friend of mine who was working in politics, and the following day, I was introduced to Congressman Bartlett. Mm-hmm. The report had zero impact. Nobody paid attention to it. It's, what do you do when you give a report and it falls in the forest and there's nobody to hear?
Wow.
And Congressman Bartlett challenged me in that he said, Bill, the problem is EMP sounds like sci-fi. It's not. It is a genuine threat. There's no public interest or support in it. Maybe you can write about it.
Wow.
Well, it was 5 years later before the book finally came out, and EMP is a very real threat. Electromagnetic pulse. All that is needed is for an enemy to detonate three small nuclear weapons, like the type Iran might already have or is striving to achieve. North Korea already has. Pop them about 250 miles above the Earth's atmosphere. It creates an electromagnetic disturbance, sort of like a static discharge that builds up, and as it hits the Earth's second, literally a microsecond later, it shorts out the entire power grid of the United States.
Wow.
And you're in the L.A. area. Imagine L.A. with no electricity for a year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah. It would be chaos.
Where did you get your water this morning?
Right.
From so it comes out of the faucet, but how did it get there all the way from the Colorado River?
Right.
Right.
You needed electricity, right?
The report estimated, and this is the shocker that made me sit up, estimates are 90% of all Americans would be dead a year after such an attack.
Wow.
Whoa.
And when I first read that, it was like, okay, guys, we're kind of exaggerating here a bit, but as I sat down and I started contemplating the math, urban centers, water supply, food supply, medication, command and control, civil control, it's a real number.
Everything you check down.
Some urban areas, the fatality rate would hit 95%.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, obviously you can do a lot with that in a fiction story where you can introduce that topic and see how people will deal with it, you know. And, I mean, the thing is, you know, if what you're saying is true, and this is not science fiction, right? I mean, this can be done. This can happen.
This is the real deal.
Right. So, this is...
I was inspired by a science fiction novel from the 60s called The Last Babylon, which is a very realistic look at what would happen in a small town in the event of a nuclear war. It was a great movie in the early 80s called Testament that did the same thing.
Right.
So I openly admit that in my foreword. Those works inspired me to write One Second After.
I see. Wow. So obviously, I mean, this sounds like worse than the radiation that would come from a nuclear bomb, because that would probably hit a rather limited area. But here you're saying they could shut down the entire country.
concerned. That's why I'm pulling my hair out at the current administration and just staring in disbelief at what they're doing. Or during a couple administrations back, when North Korea, we looked the other way, as HG nuclear capability, we have to disenthrall ourselves. We have to stop thinking about a nuclear war as the mushroom clouds going up over every city with megaton bombs. Bombs much bigger than the Hiroshima bomb popped above the Earth's atmosphere. It's a terrible way of putting it. It would be far more bang for the buck for the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's a first strike weapon that would cripple the United States in the first second of a war. And we would never recover from it.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. That's pretty scary stuff.
That's really scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome to my nightmares.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. It's like what you know can kill you, right? Wow.
Yeah, at times. There was a local magazine here that recently put me on the front page and titled me Dr. Doomsday. And I was like, yeah, but I'd rather have a different name. But at least it's better than me in a clown suit. But... we have to take a realistic look, and we have to prepare for something like this, and we're not.
Wow. So now let me ask you this. I mean, how can you prepare for something like this, like by intercepting their missiles, things like that?
Multi-layered. Let's start all the way at the top. Yes. We need a far more robust anti-ballistic missile system. Right now we have about 40 units deployed along the West Coast up towards Alaska. And that's oriented specifically towards North Korea, or what I see as actually a lesser threat, China, because China can be hurt as bad as we could.
Yeah.
The vulnerable spot is off the Gulf of Mexico. There's zero defense. Put a container ship into the Gulf of Mexico with three nuke-tipped weapons. It's a game ender in 5 to 7 minutes. So, one, that. Two, more robust foreign policy. Clear message to the bad guys. If we ever figure out that you're going to do this, and this is a tough statement here, we will preemptively move to stop you first.
Yeah.
That's a tough... Do we preemptively move? We're going to take your system out before you attack us. Third, I'm flabbergasted by the alleged agreement that's being reached by Iran. It's all but a green light.
Mm.
And I fear within a year, Israel, which is far more vulnerable than we are, they're not going to sit back and absorb it. You can't.
Yeah, it's existential.
I think they'll preemptively hit.
Yeah. Hmm.
And then all the way down to the local level, in your own home. Every American should be prepared to be able to hang on for at least a month or two on their own. And where you are, if you got hit by an 8-point whatever and everything got blown offline for a while, could the average person survive for a month without having to stand online for hours to beg for a hamburger?
That's true.
Simple things like that make the difference between life and death. Every citizen should be prepared.
Right.
Be it for an earthquake, hurricane where I am, or an EMP.
What do we do for an EMP? Like, how do we prepare for that? I know for, you know, like an earthquake, we have certain things we need, but what do we need for that?
Well, to start from bottom up, I mean, with your own family and you, a couple months worth of supplies. And it's not expensive. People can think, oh, that must cost $1,000 to buy that stuff. And so you go to the market, just pick up two or three extra cans or packages of soup, and in a month or two, you've got a stockpile of a month, 2 months extra food in the closet.
That's true.
Super important. Walmart, any camping supply, will have a water purifier. I have one of those, like, squeeze bottles you use when you're running or biking.
Right.
It's a water filtration system inside. I could pick up water out of a muddy creek. Not die from it.
Wow.
3 days later.
Wow.
Medication. Anybody with life-saving medication should have a... Don't let it get down to only one or two bottles in a pill, you know, in the pill box. Make sure you're always current. And then up to your community level, talking with neighbors, knowing who has resources. I think state-level action is super crucial. crucial. North Carolina is moving towards legislation to require the hardening of the infrastructure, which will not cost that much. And then to the federal level, which I just mentioned, a more robust foreign policy, but also federal requirements for the electrical infrastructure to be hardened.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, would you own a $500,000 house and say, screw the insurance, I don't need it?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. And
we're a nation running without an insurance policy.
That's true. No safety net.
That makes anything. Sense.
Yeah. Wow.
Scary.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean, similar things can be done by hacking into our, into our grids and everything. So we're vulnerable from computer security as well.
We're vulnerable on multiple levels. I don't know if you're familiar with the Fresno incident.
No.
Where somebody with a high-powered rifle took out, I believe it was 18 out of 21 transformers at a major substation in Fresno.
Hmm.
Nobody has yet to really figure out or publicly say what or why and how it happened. But the person that popped two more of those major transformers, they were blowing out the power for all of Silicon Valley. Was it a test run? Was it some psycho? There are so many points of vulnerability in our infrastructure. And yes, hacking is a big one.
Yeah. Wow.
It's all computer-driven now.
There was a hack just yesterday or something with the two Ukrainians that hacked a PR service, like a AP kind of thing, that releases news releases on insider trading information. So they were selling it, and people made like $100 million because they knew things that were going to happen before that. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine hacking to take the power grid down.
Right.
Or, like you said, create economic chaos. And that's another thing with EMP. All your ATMs are dead, and I'm guessing that at least 90 to 95% of the money in the United States just exists as computer.
Yeah.
You know, you stick your credit card in, you have $200 for something.
Right.
That's electronic money.
Right.
No all cash. The time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never have cash, ever. Yeah. I'm the first to go.
Right. So our money is just really numbers in the bank, you know.
Right.
Wow. So, William, briefly, let's talk about the sequel. Is this coming out soon?
Yes, September 15th.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. The title's sort of like, well, first book was 1 second after.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. Second book is titled 1 year after.
When you wrote the first book, did you know you were going to write the second book?
I'll tell you, when I got done with the first book, I never wanted to write the second book.
Well, depressed you like crazy,
It really was writing about my worst nightmares and then doing 5-6 interviews a day for months. And good gosh, when I got out of that, it was like, next book I'm going to write is going to be a happy book. And I did. I wrote a book called Pillar to the Sky in cooperation with NASA.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it was a great book, but did not go very far. And reviewer number 99 on Amazon wrote, this book, this book was terrible. That's kind of what they said.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then wrote, Fortune should stick to doom and gloom. That's his good stuff.
Really?
And well. I felt like Michael in The Godfather. Remember that line? Every time I try to get out, they pull me back in again. So, and my publisher really wanted me to do a second book on the series. So, again, as they say in The Godfather, he made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Yeah. Very cool. So, this is pretty much, I would assume, just what happened after. Well, obviously, 1 year after the EMP attack. And so I would imagine there's a lot of different directions you can still take the story. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's about how do we come back?
This would be
the worst military disaster in the history of humanity. Imagine 270 million American citizens dead.
Right.
Maybe 40 million have survived. How do you put America back together again?
Wow.
Can you put America back together again? So that's the question in book two.
Wow, I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm seeing here also that your first one was optioned for a film. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. But you're out on the West Coast, so you know how crazy it can be out there.
Yeah, I know. But
it's you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. Currently, shall we say, it's under consideration.
Yeah, it's
been optioned once. We got within a couple of days of a green light on another with another producer. And then some terrible TV series came out that looked like EMP.
I saw it. I watched it. Flash forward.
Oh, gosh. The day I saw that series announced and my agent called up, I said, we're done for it. He said, yeah.
Hey, but then it was canceled.
Is that the one that never went anywhere? I mean, there was just like one or two episodes?
There was a couple, but then it was canceled. Okay. I watched it.
Yeah, that wasn't the one where they were stuck in the parking structure and stuff in the beginning? I guess not.
I don't remember.
Yeah. But
the big hang-up for, I have a great agent. Our big hang-up is we want an accurate movie. We don't want it turned into bad, schlocky sci-fi.
Yeah.
We want it to stick to a very realistic story of, okay, I want it to be a warning. I don't want to sound like an idealistic nut. I'd rather make less money and have a movie that really conveys accurately what could happen.
Yeah.
Such as the movie Testament, which very few people know about, came out in the early 80s. And then some splashy, bad sci-fi flick, which trivializes the real threat.
Right, yeah. I see your concern. I mean, it's like your baby, you know. You want it to be handled nicely and appropriately and so forth. So I salute you for that. I mean, I, for one, think a movie is a great idea for your book. And it's fast-paced. It's interesting. It's thrilling. And like I said, from personal experience, I can say the book is very enjoyable. And I'm sure the second one is just as good. And so September 15th, the book 1 year after comes out, William Fortune. Is there any place where people can get more information? Do you have a website or any place?
I know the publisher has a website up. I think it's 1 year after something.com, or just type in the title of the book and it should lead you into, they put up a dynamite website. I don't understand that stuff. I let them do it.
Yeah.
Awesome. But they really put up a good website related to it.
Yeah. Cool. So just Google, you know, 1 year after William Fortune, right, and you'll find it. William, very fascinating stuff. I could talk to you for hours about this stuff. But
appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, and much success with the second book as well.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure being with you guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye. You see, the stuff we don't think about.
Because it's scary.
Yeah.
So, it's somebody else's job to think about it.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, nobody brings this to our consciousness. And then you think, wow.
I do want to have like a bomb shelter. Like one of those from like the olden days where it's like you had it ready to go.
Yeah, people built them in their backyards.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's something to that, I guess. Yeah. And we should have supplies and whatnot. I don't even have earthquake supplies.
I know. And that's what he was talking about, you know. He says if you guys, you know, get... and we didn't even talk about earthquakes. But yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, a power grid goes down, we're screwed.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, the things we don't think about. But you see, there's a person who's given it a lot of thought, and he's telling you the Iran deal is not a good one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to listen to that. But, there's a lot of criticism going on about it. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's almost done. I just hope our last hope is that Congress will vote it down with 2/3 so the president can't veto it.
Well, I mean, you said, what are you going to do? But, like, what can we do? Are there things we can do?
You mean regarding the deal?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, not to loosen up the sanctions, you know, because that's...
No, what can we as, like, the general public do?
Oh.
Nothing, right? Or, like, because they're voting on it and...
Oh, I see. Yeah, we can't... We don't really have a say, yeah. So it's Congress. They can vote it down, but then it goes back to the president, and he can veto it, but then he has to send it back to Congress, and then if two-thirds sign it, then it's... The president is overruled.
Right. So yeah. Then what are we supposed to do? Talk to our congressmen and
write
to them?
Yeah, that's what they say, right? To your congress people.
Right. Okay. Well, so there's something we can do.
Yeah, I suppose. And the interesting thing is even some Democrats are finding flaws with that. And but that's what he said. Look, he said the bottom line is Israel is going to do something because it's an existential threat. I mean... The thing is, one bomb and it means the end. You know, it's not like in America or other big countries like China or Russia or whatever. You get a bomb or two there and, okay, so you get a few million people dead, but the country's not destroyed.
Right.
With Israel, one or two bombs, that's it. You know, everything's gone.
Right.
So you can't take chances and you got to be preemptive in everything that you do. So...
But, I mean, don't they know that, like, if they did that to Israel, that then, like, a million other countries, well, not a million, but, like, that people would come after them, like, very...
But, you see, I don't think they would, Jen. You know, I'll tell you why, Jen. I'm like, I never realized the amount of anti-Israel sentiment in the world for the past, let's say, 40 years. Okay? I was not aware of it. I mean, we know of anti-Semitism and stuff, but anti-Israel stuff. I'm reading a whole book about how the attitude towards Israel changed after the Six-Day War. After the Palestinian problem started, everything turned around. And you're finding like one-sided condemnations and sanctions from almost every country in the world, blaming Israel for war crimes while totally ignoring the other side. And that's the thing. Okay, you want to criticize, you know. You're not necessarily anti-Semite if you criticize Israel. But the point is, at the same token, be objective.
Right.
Criticize the other side as well.
I don't know how they aren't. Never happens.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, because the UN is totally dominated by Arab countries and stuff. So it's not objective. You have other, countries that don't even matter, like oppose Israel's actions and things like that, and everybody forgets that the objective of Hamas and stuff and all of our enemies is to really kill civilians. If Palestinian civilians get killed, that's because they're used as human shields. But the thing is that you're always going to have collateral damage in war. There's always going to be civilians dying, but you want to minimize that. What Hamas is doing is trying to maximize that, where Israel is trying to minimize it. So the intent is also important here. What are you trying to do?
Yeah.
But,
if a country tried to take out Israel.
Right.
Or a group, whatever it is. Let's say something happened to Israel.
Right.
In that kind of capacity. They would really also have to hit us, too. At the same time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, at least our country would go after them.
Right.
Because we'd have to. That's what we would do. But, right. Like, they would have to simultaneously hit both countries.
Yeah.
And granted, it might not be a world war because, you know, if there are countries out there that, you know, don't like Israel, that's one thing. But it will be a U.S. war.
Right. And a lot of countries are afraid of a nuclear Iran, you know. I mean, it's not just, Saudi Arabia, you know. The thing is that Iran wants to dominate the entire Middle East. So even Arabic countries are afraid.
Well, and then, you know, not that I would hope this, but maybe if they did anything to Israel or even another country. Let's say they decimated another country just for the sake of doing it.
Right.
I think that would garner enough fear in other countries that it could happen to them next, that they would rally and unite. And I would hope that is never the case. I have chills just thinking about it. But, like, I wish it wouldn't even go there. And, they're obviously – it's like the same thing with 9/11. We could have done things before. We could have done this. We could have done that in hindsight. But, like, we have the opportunity right now not to look back later and say we could have done different.
Right, and preempt it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree. because we keep pretending these things are not happening, but or that we're tired of war, but our enemies are not. And, you know, if you want to defend yourself, you got to stay in the war. So, yeah, that's a lot of stuff to talk about. And people, there's not enough conversation about it, I think. I mean, look, what we're focusing is on Donald Trump, you know, and his relationship to women and stuff. I mean, come on. You know, the thing is, yes, it's a point, but obviously he doesn't care or regret anything that he said, and he doesn't really give a damn, and he's still high in the polls. I mean, that's like a big, big puzzle there. How is that possible? But it's possible. I don't understand, but it's happening. So these are like the things that are not really important. What's important is, you know, the direction our country is going, you know, where people want to be. And yeah, I don't know, it's up in the air. It's very scary. Now they're gonna investigate Hillary Clinton's mail server.
Yeah
I mean, that's like a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, whatever they find, it could end her political career.
It could, but you know what, you gotta respect her because she handed it over.
Yeah.
So I'm not mad at that. Like, fine, whatever they find, great. But.
Well, but what she could not have, though, because, I mean, people would be suspicious right away.
Of course, which, yeah. I mean, who knows?
But you're right. You know, the thing is that she has to go along with this, and we'll see what happens, you know. But it could totally be a serious thing. And, you know, the sad thing is I was many years for Hillary. I thought... you know, she probably would do a good job and everything. But then it's just like all the stuff starts coming out about her, and she's becoming anti-Israel too. And I just don't understand it. So at this point, I really don't want her anymore. You know, I think she's changed. I think she's different. What's this noise? Oh, the sirens. I thought I was hearing people like screaming and stuff. I'm like, what the hell?
I think you're like now just afraid because of the EMP talk. Just normal sirens.
Right.
The world is not ending at this moment.
Well, that's what I heard through the through the microphone, so I don't know. yeah. They're talking about this... I guess they have this bar in the UK now where you can get drunk without drinking.
How does that work?
How does that work? They're creating vapor, and you inhale vapors of the booze. And it makes like the whole thing, they're saying, it becomes like totally cloudy. You can't even see.
What's the point of that?
I don't know. They're saying it's ingested through the lungs and eyeballs.
What?
You know, so yeah, I don't get it, you know. And they're saying also they give you like hooded raincoats to prevent your clothes smelling like boozy fog.
This sounds like the dumbest thing that has ever happened.
Right?
I mean, while it sounds great for somebody on a diet because you're not ingesting alcohol calories,
right?
That's just ridiculous.
It is, you know. I mean, I
who
don't
wants
get
to
it.
Go somewhere where you have to put on a raincoat? And your eyes and your lungs are filled with something. Like, has anybody read anything about, like, the health industry lately? Like, I don't know. Goodness.
That's true. Why would they do that in the first place?
I don't
place?
Know. People are stupid.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm happy to say that. People do dumb things.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just trying to get some attention. I don't know. I'm sure they'll turn to a regular bar soon.
I actually,
if nobody goes there.
It's just strange. I saw actually one of the Starbucks that now serves alcohol. Like they serve wine and beer and like in Beverly Hills.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it started in, I think, Seattle, where they were going to start selling that. Like some locations would have a license. So it wasn't just coffee, but I didn't see anyone drinking alcohol.
Yeah, it's Starbucks.
That, yeah. Like, wouldn't necessarily... I mean, I guess if you're... Why not? You know, like, you could go somewhere just for drinks. Like, you go somewhere just for coffee.
That's true. Yeah, if you just want to sit down and have a beer, there's no places other than a bar.
Which, why don't you just go to a bar?
Right,
I don't know.
Exactly. Well, maybe you don't want to hang around a bar. Maybe you want to sit outside and drink your beer or something. I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's interesting, though, to sell beer at Starbucks. Yeah.
Very strange.
You mentioned Seattle. That's actually my new desired destination that I want to go to.
I was going
to
say, weren't you going away?
Yeah. You know, I even have an article here on vacations that the body needs it. But, yeah, Jen, I mean, I'm still planning it. You have to understand that if it was up to me, I'd leave tomorrow. And I keep on fantasizing that I can leave tomorrow. But it's just not like that. Because of the business, I have to plan. So, and it's hard for me to know what's going to happen like 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now. So I'm sort of like caught in the circle, and I'm trying to get out of it and just say, okay, I'm just going to go and let the people behind that I'm leaving behind here figure it out.
Well, that's why you're supposed to set up like a support staff. And,
right.
and
I do have
second
that.
In command, you know, crisis solutions. You're also available by email and phone.
Right.
You have a computer that could probably go with you.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, what do you physically have to do?
Well, run the video shows at night, but then those are, I'm starting to transfer over to our staff here. So, yeah, so once that's done, I think I can go.
That's great.
So, yeah. Now I'm trying to figure out if to take my son or my daughter or both, or because I'd love to go. My son is like, yeah, let's take this guy's trip. I'm like, okay.
That's
let's
great.
Let's do that. I know. That would be cool.
Hasn't right? your whole thing been that, like, your kids don't want to hang out with you? And they're at that age that they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So if one's
but
asking.
You're right. They're coming around now. I mean, they want to hang out
it
with
happens.
Me a lot more. Yeah, huh?
We flip a switch where we're like, oh, you're cool again. I wouldn't even say that you're cool. Like, parents aren't cool. But, like, we want to spend time with you.
Yeah. No, that's true. Plus, I mean, my kids have said that I'm cool.
Well, that's
their
good.
Mom, too. But, yeah. So, I mean, they were always proud of us and stuff, you know. Felt we weren't really being, like, you know. Like the strict parents and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think there's a lot to be said for that too. But, you know, if you, it depends how you want to raise your kids and everything. But I remember when they were young and their friends would be restricted and stuff and what they can do. My kids felt good that they had this freedom, you know, to
yeah.
be able to do things.
I mean, I didn't mind having like, you know, a curfew and things like that. Like that didn't bother me. I got where they were coming from.
Right.
And like, it's a crazy world out there. And it wasn't about me. It was more that they were like, nothing good can come out of you being out that late. Like, just go home. What do you need
True.
To do at that hour?
True.
Like, what's going to be the difference between being out from 12 to 2 when you're 18 years old?
Yeah.
Like, just go home. So it was more like protecting me from the outside world than because they knew I wouldn't do anything bad.
Right.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I literally did nothing bad. So,
yeah. But some parents overdo that.
Yeah, they get a little crazy. And it's more like just being like overbearing and like rule making and all that.
Right. And then the kids have social issues, you know, because they don't really know how to mingle. They're being like, they're being protected, excuse me, protected from everything. And how are they going to face reality when they grow up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one thing to be like protected. There's another thing to be sheltered.
Mm. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough said for one day. I think we talked about a lot of relevant things today.
We did.
Which is very cool.
Good for us.
Yes. And we thank our guest, William Forschen. Go out and get 1 year after.
September 15th.
Very cool. September 15th. I'm going to be standing in line to get that. All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.